Okay. Before you have Justice Mary Ellen Coghlan, Justice Aurelia Puchinsky, and myself, Justice James Fitzgerald Smith. The case is Chrysoula Dana versus Great Northern Insurance Company, 12300, I mean, sorry, 0224. Our pr basic procedure is the appellant will go first and has his 10 or 15 minutes. We usually do not interrupt unless you go off on a tangent. And then we ask questions, and then it's the other side that gets the same opportunity, and then the closing. With that, I guess we can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court and counsel. I represent the appellant, Great Northern Insurance Company. This is an appeal from the trial court's granting of a motion for summary judgment. It was based on a stipulation of facts that opposing counsel and I drew up because we did not believe that a trier of fact would find differently. So we saved ourselves some time and stipulated to that. The question that's presented to this court is whether the trial court properly interpreted the misappropriation exclusion of a valuable articles policy insuring the appellant and her former husband. So it's Chrysoula Dana and George Dana was her husband. She had a diamond ring that was given to her before they got married.
You don't have to go into the facts. We pretty much know them in that part. So we just need really your presentation of the law and how you want to deal with that.
Well, Your Honor, it's my belief we should get right to the point. If you've read the briefs, the point's quite obvious. Our dispute is really whether the misappropriation clause, as it's set forth in this policy, whether that's subject to what they're calling and what the trial court called the innocent insured exclusion. I'm sure the court's well aware that the West Bend against Salimi court, the Economy Fire and Casualty against Warren decision, they held that if you could interpret an intentional act exclusion or another exclusion which would preclude coverage for the misrepresentation of one insured, that unless the policy clearly stated that excluded all insureds, the innocent insured, as a matter of interpretation, would be covered, that there must be a clear statement excluding the innocent insured. That the rationale for that, by the way, which is set forth in the Aurelius case, where they took a look at a different policy than what the previous courts had looked at and said, well, this clearly excludes coverage, but the rationale behind it wasn't that you couldn't preclude an innocent insured from coverage. It's just that you have to do it based on the reasonable expectations of the insured. And the exact quote out of the Aurelius case is, a person would not have understood that the wrongdoing of a co-insured would be imputed to him. Well, if you look at the policy, the first several exclusions, one is the potential acts exclusion, which it's been argued about, but it was never asserted by my client as a reason for denial. Right under that is the misappropriation clause. And there's a series of other exclusions, and they all start the same way. It's saying there is no coverage, you know, for these types of losses. And of course, this one says, get it exact. We do not cover any loss caused by the taking or other misappropriation by or directed by a person named in the coverage summary. Of course, there's no dispute that both George and Chrysoula Dana are named insureds and they're identified in the coverage summary. The trial court, in its order, determined that the policy, she did a nice job of summarizing, it says the misappropriation clause excludes coverage where one of the insureds took or otherwise misappropriated property. And I think it should end from another insured. And because you can't have a loss unless an insured is missing something or has something damaged. There is no public policy and there is no reason to engraft an innocent insured exception into a misappropriation clause. By doing so, you literally obliterate the clause. And of course, there's a canon of statutory construction that you should not interpret a clause in such a way as to render it meaningless, which this would, because no one's imputing misconduct from one insured to the other. You're not precluding coverage for an insured because another insured did something wrong. In this case, it doesn't cover the event where one insured takes property from another, because if there was coverage for the innocent insured, or in other words, the victim of the taking, the clause would never have effect. And the obvious purpose of a misappropriation clause is insurance companies don't want to get involved, and nor should insureds have to pay more money to cover events where one insured's taking property from another. That's just not the type of loss that's contemplated by this type of policy. By the way, under the Aurelius case, one of the things that it notes at page 973 is that the same rules of construction apply. You should construe the policy as a whole. And of course, I've cited numerous cases that say you shouldn't interpret a clause in such a way as to render it meaningless. I don't believe, as counsel has argued, that you can interpret Salimi, Warren, and its progeny to create a rule that there must always be an innocent insured exclusion. In fact, Aurelius said exactly the opposite. No, you just got to make it clear there's no coverage. But in this case, it is clear there's no coverage. In fact, the judge found that the clause was unambiguous, and it clearly excludes what one insured takes property from another. That's clearly what happened here. Well, there is a third possibility. I don't think that's relevant to this appeal. Well, it could be depending on how you decide the case, of course. There is what I would consider a remote possibility that someone else could have taken it. Like, for example, if the pawn shop where Chrysoula had pawned it much earlier had substituted, that would clearly be a covered loss. That's a theft by a third party. There are other possible ways that this ring could have been taken. The problem, of course, is that all the evidence that's cited in both opposing counsel's brief and our brief makes it pretty clear that there was a stated intent by George Dana that she would never get her ring back. He had opportunity, which means time, to substitute the diamond for a faux diamond. He had motive to do so. And in fact, the second that the court ordered the ring be returned and it was finally returned, it was discovered that there had been a substitution. But if opposing counsel wants to argue that no, there's a reasonable chance we could convince the jury that it probably was pawn shop or one of the attorneys or one of the family members took the ring in a short time they had it. That's fine. That buys us a jury trial. So the question then finally comes down to, is there a public policy? Is there some reason that you should engraft the innocent insured concept onto a misappropriation clause? And of course, a misappropriation clause can only apply when there's an innocent insured. So what the real question is there a public policy that should preclude a policy from ever having a misappropriation clause? Opposing counsel has pointed out, and I certainly agree, I found no case, and we both, I think, have searched diligently for any Illinois case that interprets the misappropriation clause in this context. We have not. But there is a New Jersey case that we cite at length and quote at length in our brief that explains exactly the points I'm making here, that if you look at these two exclusions, it's clear why, you know, one actually carves out an innocent insured exception, and the other does not. And of course, you cannot, because if you carve out an innocent insured exception, the exception would swallow the exclusion, and it would make no sense. There are arguments that have been made by opposing counsel that misappropriation, the use of that term in conjunction with taking, somehow qualifies the word taking. The trial court did not buy it, but I would note that if you look at some of the dictionary definitions, like, for example, the new Oxford Merriam-Webster definition, which was cited at C-199 of the record, the definition is to appropriate wrongly as by theft. So this, I mean, it clearly was a taking. It clearly was one insured stealing something from another insured. She clearly had the unqualified right to it. There are other arguments that they made about our investigation being incomplete, but that I don't think that's in front of the court, because you can argue that to a jury. I see that all the time, as you can imagine, in my position and cases I handled. But that has nothing to do with the trial court's opinion. It has nothing to do with the legal position of this case and the issues presented to this court. That can all be argued back in the trial court, because if the court agrees that this is an unambiguous clause, as the trial court found, and the innocent insured exception does not need to be engrafted on a misappropriation clause, then it is certainly opposing counsel's right to have a jury decide, if he wants, whether or not someone other than George Dana took the ring. There's also an issue of whether she took the ring. He, not with much evidence, but he suggested, George Dana suggested, that maybe Chrysula substituted it to set him up in the divorce proceedings.
That's not before us, so let's not waste our time.
Agreed. So, Judge, that brings me to the end of my argument. There is no reason to engraft this innocent insured rule of interpretation onto a misrepresentation clause. There's no public policy that would require other insureds to pay for this type of loss, because, as you can imagine, it's not there's a lot of reasons for that. And so I think the court should reverse that part of the trial court's ruling and send us back to the trial court for further proceedings.
I just have one question. I read this policy and I say the insurance company didn't do a real good job of nailing down all the avenues. It left several doors open. You know, it just it left doors for all sorts of lawsuits, if you ask me.
Could you give me an example, Your Honor? I'm not sure.
Well, just the one right here. I mean, I can't see when you insure two people that there couldn't come up just what did happen and many other things when you're insuring two people and a divorce occurs.
Well, my argument, Your Honor, is that you can always add more language and more words to try and make something even clearer than it is. But it specifically states there's no coverage when one insured takes property from another. The trial judge so found. And the entire innocent insured doctrine is based upon the reasonable expectations of the insured. But if you read this policy, especially if you read the intentional act clause, and then the next clause, of course, is a misappropriation clause. And then there's several more beyond it, all which say there is no coverage in this event. You couldn't reasonably expect that to mean that, well, but I wouldn't be covered because I didn't take it. Otherwise, if you read that, there would be no, it would have no meaning, as I've argued.
Other questions?
Wouldn't it be a lot easier just to put language in the exclusion that says that exactly what you're arguing here, that in the event of wrongdoing by one of the insured, there's no coverage to either insured? I mean, I think that's basically what the judge found, right?
Well, she didn't. What she did find,
she found that the innocent insured doctrine applied because your policy did not clearly say otherwise.
Well, specifically, she said when the policy does not contain a clear statement that the policy is void as
right.
to all insurance.
I'm looking right at the order. I know exactly what she said. And why is she wrong?
Because you don't need to add additional language in a misappropriation clause, because there cannot be an innocent insured when one takes property from another. Otherwise, the clause would have no meaning. And I think it's reasonable that if a person read this, they would say, well, there's no coverage if someone else named in the policy takes my property, because that's literally what it says.
You know, just taking what you're saying, what is the purpose of this policy then? Nobody wins if somebody gets a divorce and this event occurs. And these people have been paying money all these years. So are you going to give them back their money?
Well, Judge, what they're paying for, of course, is coverage for their valuable articles. This is, of course, attached to a if anyone takes, they're paying for risks that are covered under the policy. The question, of course, is this a risk covered under the policy? And the answer is they're paying for example, if the pawn shop substituted the diamond and stuck in a synthetic one, yes, that would be covered. If the lawyers took the ring, yes, it would be covered as long as it wasn't at the direction of their clients. And if family members did that, yes, it would be covered as long as it wasn't at the direction of one of the people covered in the policy. So there's they're paying for the risks that are covered by the policy. And of course, if they don't materialize, but this is one of the risks that the policy is clearly trying to not pay for, because it's going to increase the cost of the policy. And the question is this the type of loss that a policyholder should want to cover? And there's all sorts of exclusions in policies. The fact that the loss in front of us or before the court is not covered doesn't make the policy valueless. All the other risks are covered.
Any other questions? All right. Gussie, you may go forward.
May it please the court, Costa Diamond on behalf of Appellee Cross Appellant Crisula Dana. Your Honors, there are two main issues before the court today. First was Great Northern's application of the misappropriation exclusion appropriate given the circumstances? And two, if so, does the innocent insured doctrine apply to protect innocent insurance like Crisula? First, I'd like to address the application of the misappropriation exclusion. The trial court in their October 6th order specifically stated, regardless of the plain ordinary meaning of misappropriation, this policy explicitly states the clause applies when there's a taking or other misappropriation by an insured. Black letter Illinois insurance law is clear that when a term is not defined in a policy, the court should apply its plain ordinary meaning in that circumstance. Upon a simple reading of the Great Northern policy in this case, there is not a definition of misappropriation. Therefore, the plain and ordinary meaning should be applied in this scenario. The dictionary definition of misappropriation is to steal something you've been entrusted to take care of and use it for your own good. Every single Illinois case that I could find that discussed the term misappropriation dealt with the loss of property that was first entrusted to an individual prior to a wrongdoing. Some examples of those cases were misappropriation of client funds, misappropriation of trade secrets, misappropriation of intellectual property. I could not find one case that applied the term misappropriation in the way that Great Northern is attempting to apply it in this case. Great Northern argues that the term misappropriation is, even if the term misappropriation is ambiguous, the term taking within that exclusion is not. The trial court agreed with this logic in their October 6, 2022 order. However, both Great Northern and the trial court failed to realize that the word taking should be read in the context of the exclusion, which is titled misappropriation. If it's not, then what is the difference between an intentional act taking and a misappropriation taking? Wouldn't the policy just then have two nearly identical exclusions? It only makes logical sense that the misappropriation exclusion applies to scenarios where the property was first entrusted to somebody and then there was a wrongful taking of that property, not just that there was a taking of the property. In this case, Crisula never entrusted the ring to George Dana or anyone else, so there cannot be a misappropriation under the undisputed facts of this case. Therefore, the Great Northern misappropriation exclusion is inapplicable and appears to be an attempt on Great Northern's behalf to circumvent the innocent insured protections clearly stated in the intentional acts exclusion, which are required by the Illinois Domestic Violence Act. If Great Northern truly wanted to limit coverage as a result of domestic disputes and abuse between co-insureds, it should have clearly stated its intent in the policy as required by Illinois law. Counsel stated numerous times that the misappropriation clause is obvious that it's meant to do this, or it's clear that it's meant to do this. But when you read the actual misappropriation clause, it's not clear or obvious that it meant to exclude coverage as to all insureds if one insured was responsible for the misappropriation of the property. Which leads me to my next point. Even if the misappropriation exclusion is applicable, Illinois law is well settled that innocent insured like Crisula will be afforded coverage if the policy does not contain specific language excluding coverage as to all insureds for the wrongdoing of one insured. The first district in Warren established and created the Illinois common law innocent insured doctrine after canvassing other jurisdictions and analyzing the matter. The Warren court, as you know, ultimately held that the wrongdoing of a co-insured could not be imputed onto an innocent insured unless the insurer makes the terms express in that regard. Since the Warren court's holding, numerous other Illinois courts have uniformly applied the innocent insured doctrine to policy exclusions. Cases such as Salemi, Maselli, Weissick all applied it in a similar manner. The trial court, in finding that the innocent insured doctrine applied in this case, did not deviate from the well-settled Illinois law and specifically stated that based on the holding in Salemi, if Great Northern intended for the wrongdoing of one insured to bar recovery for all insureds, it should have expressly stated its intent in the policy. The subject Great Northern policy contains no such language. Great Northern also argues that well-established Illinois law on the application of innocent insurer doctrine should not apply specifically to its misappropriation exclusion. However, Great Northern cites no authority to support this contention and actually admits that there's no Illinois case on point. Great Northern also ignores the Illinois Supreme Court's ruling in Tozzolino and Turpinus, which specifically states that the Illinois innocent insured doctrine should be applied to policy exclusions generally. No Illinois court has ever held that the innocent insured doctrine is inapplicable to misappropriation exclusions. Illinois law requires the courts to consider the policyholder's reasonable expectations as to whether a co-insured's wrongdoings would be imputed onto them. Upon a simple reading of the Great Northern policy, it states it will cover a loss if it's a result of pattern of domestic violence. Any reasonable person reading this policy would have a reasonable expectation that Crisula would be covered for the loss of her ring, given the circumstances and facts in this case. If Great Northern truly intended for such loss to be excluded, then it should have expressly stated its intent in the policy as required by Illinois law, and it did not do so. Therefore, Crisula should be afforded coverage for a loss as correctly held by the trial court on October 6, 2022. In addition, in counsel's opening argument, he refers to the Aurelius case numerous times and kind of uses that as his authority that the innocent insured doctrine should not apply to the misappropriation clause. And the Aurelius case is different than all the other cases that I've stated in that the court found that the language was sufficient and did state clearly express its intent to limit coverage as to all insurance. The actual language states, quote, "We will not pay for you or any other insured for this loss," end quote. With that, Your Honors, I ask that the court overturn the trial court's ruling as to the ambiguousness of the misappropriation clause and affirm its judgment as to the application of the innocent insured doctrine given the circumstances. Thank you.
Any questions? Hearing no questions, I guess, James, you can do your closing.
Thank you, Your Honor. The argument that somehow one definition in the dictionary of misappropriation must require the court to ignore the disjunctive or, which has been interpreted by the court to mean, by the appellate courts in Illinois, to mean either or, and it completely ignored the word taking. And that's just simply contrary to the canons of statutory construction. The argument about the Domestic Violence Act, we've addressed that in the in our briefs at length, but they never pled that she was and that would be a question of fact, I guess, for the trial court as to whether she was that this was part of a pattern of domestic violence and whether he had been prosecuted. There are three requirements under the innocent insured clause that's required by the Department of Insurance for the intentional acts clause. By the way, this obviously this policy was reviewed by the Illinois Department of Insurance. The idea that you have to put that on a misappropriation clause, I think, is contrary to common sense. The idea that the Illinois Supreme Court, first of all, the Tuprezzino case, to which counsel referred, that does not involve a policy exclusion. They simply made a comment that, hey, these are typically applied in this case. But before it was the question of whether the insurance company, which was the ISBA, could rescind its policy based on a misrepresentation in the inception or to get the policy issued. And the court said, no, there's no innocent insured. If one person didn't make the misrepresentation, but another did, there's no coverage. So there can't be a holding in that case related to this issue because it wasn't before the court. It's clearly dicta, and it's clearly an observation about when the doctrine typically applies. There is no public policy reason. There is no reason other than to ignore the doctrine of interpretation that you should interpret a clause to have meaning. Because if this doesn't apply, if the exclusion doesn't apply to this case, it never applies, and therefore it has no effect. And what the Aurelius case said was you should look at all of them. I agree that the language is different, but they were talking about the intentional act clause. The question is whether you would have to engraft that concept onto every exclusion in the policy, including one like the misrepresentation one, to which, if applied, would render it meaningless. And that's why this court should reverse the trial court. Thank you.
Any questions? Well, thank you. This is kind of an interesting case because it's just like Illinois never addressed the issue. So it may require the author to try and make this into an opinion. So we'll see. Thank you both. Your briefs were well done and kind of fun to read. So we'll let you know as soon as we brainstorm it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.